Welcome to the 12th episode of the Sirens of Scream, the geek podcast that proves sometimes dead is better. I'm Melissa Megan, and I'm here today with Jackie DeVore.
Hello.
And Sierra Houck.
Hello.
And today we have two very special guests joining us. We have Karen Cruz and Sabrina Khan from The Witch Files.
Hello.
What's up?
Hey, ladies.
Hey.
You two have been, I think you two were like our first fans of the show. The first ones that spoke to us anyway.
Yep.
Yeah, you guys have been really awesome and supportive, and we've been checking out your show, and you always send us really fun comments and everything, so we really wanted to get you on, and we basically just kind of threw, we just said, please come and talk to us, and we'll talk about whatever you want. So, yeah, and you girls chose Sam Raimi, so we have some fun and weird things to talk about tonight. The first thing we're going to do, we like to jump right in and put you guys on the spot and do something called Grill the Guests, which I'm sure you've heard. Boy. Yeah, you guys listen to the show, so I know you already know the questions, but we're gonna do it anyway. So, and you can answer these, you know, it's up to you two. Who wants to go first? You can answer them together. I don't care. Whatever is fun for you.
Alrighty.
Okay, sounds good.
So, question number one. You ready?
Ready. Go.
If you were in a slasher film, which character would you want to be, and which character would you realistically end up being?
Ideally, I'd like to be that survivor girl that turns out to be the badass.
The final girl?
The final girl, yeah.
Girl, yeah. Who everyone doesn't expect to survive. But in the real world, I'd probably be the witch doing as much magic as possible to protect everyone and keep everyone safe. And hopefully no one dies.
I don't know a lot about doing witchery, but it seems like it always takes a little bit of time, so you might not live very long.
Or prepare now, just in case this happens later on down the road. Like, just go ahead and get a go bag ready.
Yeah, I know. But there's protection stuff that you can do right away and works, you know, at the moment that you do it.
That depends on what level you are. Low-level magicians never get very far.
Yeah, it's not Harry Potter.
It doesn't work like in video games where you can just, like, shoot ice at the bad guy, freeze them.
You have to have enough mana first.
Yeah.
No, I only wish.
Sabrina, who would you be?
Let's see. I'd probably want to be the good girl virgin that survives to the end, but I'd probably be one of the badass dudes that goes right for the baseball bat. It was like, I know what's going on. This is gonna get bad fast. Where are the weapons?
So would you be the one that's like, you're so anxious to take care of everybody that you just run out into the dark woods with your baseball bat, like, I got this.
Probably.
And like, it probably wouldn't. She's not coming back.
Yeah.
Question number two. Have you ever had a supernatural encounter? I feel like this one could go on for a while. Pick your favorite.
Yeah. The answer is yes. This is Karen, by the way. When I was a little girl, we used to visit our grandmother, and she lived in a very old house that dated back to the Victorian times. And the house, every time I went, felt very heavy and very spooky. And I had a few ghost encounters while in that house. One of the most memorable ones was I had gotten up in the middle of the night and I was going to the bathroom. And I had to cross the living room to get to the bathroom. And my grandmother had this huge rocking chair in the living room. And all the window shutters were closed. All the doors were closed. And I start walking towards the bathroom. And all of a sudden, the rocker starts to move back and forth. And not in a slow way, but kind of in a fast way. And then when I would look, it would stop. And then when I would keep walking, out of the corner of my eye, I would see it start rocking again.
That's weird.
I know. And then another time, I was sitting in her kitchen, which faced the garden, and I'm eating my Cheerios. And I look out the window into the garden, and standing out there is a young woman in a Victorian dress, And I looked, I looked back in the kitchen, and then I looked back and she was gone. And then I told my grandmother about it. She goes, "Oh yeah, we see stuff here all the time."
Oh yeah, that's Linda.
So we found out later on that the house belonged to a family who had all died of tuberculosis. And apparently were buried on the property.
That's never good. That is just asking for big giant ghosts.
And so when they built that whole section of houses, I don't think that they dug up whatever bodies were already in that section. So they basically built all the houses on over graves.
Nice.
So
that's how the poltergeist happened.
Yeah, that's how you get ghosts. Everybody knows that.
I'd like to know why ghosts have a thing for rocking chairs. Why don't they ever just sit on the couch? Or you know, like
maybe they do, but we don't notice them on the couch because it doesn't make as much noise and see, like, action as the rocking chair.
You don't see like mm-hmm. a butt imprint when they sit yeah. down. Yeah. That would be a little less scary, right? You just see a butt on the couch.
I know. And another time I felt like there was a pressure on my chest, and I woke up in a panic because I couldn't breathe. And when I look up, I see a shadow cross, like kind of fly over me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was really creepy, really scary. And I'm kind of sensitive for those sort of things. So there you go.
Very cool.
Well, that's better than most of my stories.
How are you going to follow that?
I've never seen anything. I usually feel stuff or smell. I've smelled ghosts. Relative mm-hmm. ghosts, so not as nearly as interesting.
What do they smell
probably
like?
The creepy. Well, I would smell my grandmother's perfume after she died. We're currently in her old apartment, which I took over maybe about 5 years ago. And she kind of lingered around a little bit. I used to smell my uncle, who also used to live up here, passed around the same time. But probably the scariest thing I ever experienced. A mutual friend of ours had a necklace that she got secondhand that must have been cursed. And she had some haunting experiences that I won't get into now, but we eventually figured out that there's probably something attached to this necklace. Mm-hmm. So we tried to do a little witchy stuff to get rid of the ghost. And during at the very start of the ritual, she goes to get the necklace out of the drawer where she was keeping it. And I felt this invisible wind, kind of this thing rushed up to my face, got right up next to me, and just was just projecting a lot of anger and just trying to intimidate me. And it kind of made me feel like a sickening kind of tightening feeling around my stomach area. And my response was, "Fuck you."
Thanks. That's a great response.
And I tried to kind of just like mentally reinforce the shielding that I had set up to protect myself. And we carried on with the ritual. But that was the strongest and most malignant thing I've ever come across.
Mm. That sounds like very much like a movie we're going to talk about tonight.
The third question is really relevant to what's going to be happening when the show actually posts. Because it's going to be posting close to Halloween here, isn't it?
You want to ask him, Jackie?
Sure. What were you guys for Halloween last year?
Well, that's a little bit of a disappointment.
You were awesome for Halloween last year?
I didn't have any big Halloween plans, so I just kind of pulled together a last-minute Day of the Dead Sugar Skull costume. But, I mean, it was pretty good. I had a nice faint paint situation going on. I had a crown of autumn flowers and a lace dress that had a skeleton print on it. So, like, you know, visually looked pretty good, but it was really tame. Womp womp.
I was a forest spirit, more like a fairy. And Sabrina actually sewed the costume for me. It was all in fall neutral colors. It had actual leaves on it and layers of greenery on it. It was really beautiful. Really beautiful.
And the skirt was made out of tooling that had glitter on it, and she left a sparkle trail.
Oh, wow. Nice.
That's perfect.
So the story really is that Sabrina didn't have a costume prepared because she worked so hard on Karen's costume for Halloween, right?
That is right.
Yeah.
She's like, I'll go with it. I'll take that.
Yeah.
Well, that year I was also finishing up a really big Game of Thrones costume that I wore to Comic-Con, and that really just took up all my energy. And by the time Halloween rolled around, I was just dead.
Yeah. And by the way, she was an awesome Daenerys Targaryen. Oh, awesome.
Nice. I can see it. I can totally see it.
Yeah.
You should send us a picture of that.
Mm, will
do.
I have to
get
some good ones, though.
Yeah. Yeah. The beating on the dress alone took months just to do.
Oh, yeah. I think start to finish that costume took me about a year of work in my spare time.
Yeah.
Hey, I went the Amazon route this year, so don't be embarrassed about anything. Like, what can we buy on Amazon and get here in less than 2 weeks?
I actually just finished my mask for my Halloween the other day. You want to see it?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Oh, my God. Nice. It looks so beautiful.
It's got, like, skin flaps hanging off of it and stuff there. Oh. And I'm going to put some LED lights in the eyes to light up there. It's going to be rad.
I love his, gooey looking gum disease he's got going on.
Mm-hmm.
Sabrina and Karen, just before we launch into our recommendations, do you want to just tell our listeners a little bit about your show and kind of what you guys do?
Sure. Well, our podcast is called The Witch Files, and that's witch with a Y. And what we're doing is reviewing anything popular media. So that's some occasionally video games, but mostly movies, TV, and comics that have magical practitioners in them. So that could be witches, warlocks, sorcerers, shamans, anyone practicing magic.
Cool. Yeah, and we kind of review the magical system and see if there's any correlation to real world magic. And we get into the history of the period, of the piece, if there is any. We do a lot of research, a lot of magical research.
Yeah. And our rating is based on how accurate everything is and whether or not the magic we see is going to hold up if anyone actually tried it or.
Yeah. And the reason why we started the podcast is because, we see a lot of negative stuff out there.
And a lot of ridiculous
stuff. So we were sort of like, we're trying to weed the bad from the good from the bad, so to speak, and find as much good stuff as possible that we can recommend.
Yeah, I was like, if this did exist, we would listen to it, but it didn't, so we stepped up.
Nice. Do you, this might be hard to come up with spur of the moment, but I'm interested now. Can you tell me, what do you think is the worst piece of pop culture that you've ever rated and reviewed, and what is the best one since you've started your show? Now, I think your show is fairly new, so maybe this isn't that hard, but...
Yeah, I think we just finished recording episode 14 today.
Nice.
And I think some of the worst... The lowest ratings we've given was actually from the X-Files, which is a shame.
Boy.
I know. We're huge fans of the X-Files, but the magic episodes, most of them didn't hold up. Two of the four episodes were just trash.
Yeah.
And the remake of The Wicker Man, that was pretty awful.
Was there something that you were really impressed with?
We were really impressed recently by Black Magic by Greg Rucka. Mm. And also, trying to think what else.
We gushed a while over Witcher.
The Witcher 3 is another favorite.
I love that game so much.
Oh, God, it's amazing.
I already told you I love it like 3 times, but I love that game. I was glancing over your site today, and I saw some fun links in there, references to the different kinds of witches. And I really want to jump in there and learn some more about, what were those witches called? The Crones of Crookback Bog.
Oh, yeah.
Like, those witches were, they were terrifying.
Yeah.
Terrifying. I want to know more about, I love that you have the links for the actual lore that kind of matches up with who they are. So I want to learn more about them.
Yeah, they're based, there's a lot of Slavic folklore in that game.
It's very, Viking-y, you know?
Yeah.
Makes sense.
So... Yeah.
Yeah, surprisingly, a lot of real history. A friend of my husband's, one of his bandmates, is actually from Poland, and he was a huge fan of the Witcher series, so I was grilling him for a while. Apparently, a lot of it is really just torn right out of their history and folklore, really accurate.
Yeah.
That's very cool. I don't think I would expect that.
No, not at all.
Yeah, and the Crones are based on Baba Yaga, who is a big, huge crone goddess in Slavic folklore.
And she's really quirky and kind of, sometimes she's mean, sometimes she's really nice. You never know if she's going to help you or try to, you know, just eat you. She's got a lot of attitude.
Yeah.
Yeah, those witches, I remember when, I love the monsters in the game, but when those witches popped up, I was just like, especially when they start speaking, the one with the kind of the cup over her face, she sounds like she's speaking through like a dirty can, and it just got this like nasty, like metallic sound to it. It just makes me cringe every time I hear her voice. And then the other one's got like bugs climbing out of her eyeball. It's just so gross.
Yeah.
They're disgusting.
Yeah. She's the one that creeped me out the most with the bugs coming out of the eyes. That was terrible.
And then the third one has like the limbs hanging off her. So she wobbles around when she talks. She just like grabs like random legs and arms. She's like, it's so disgusting. So let's get started with what we're loving now, because I think we have a lot of stuff to talk about with Sam Raimi tonight. Sierra, how about you start us off tonight? Tell us what you want to recommend to everybody.
Yeah. So I have two podcasts to recommend tonight. The first one is one that I just started listening to. It's pretty new. It started in August, so there aren't too many episodes to catch up on. But it's comedian Kyle Kinane and Dave Stone, who's another comedian, started this podcast about ghosts and urban legends and things like that. They've talked about the Men in Black and things like that. And so it's an interesting mix of banter and bullshitting and then also getting into these really weird things. And you can tell that these guys have been friends for so long and they're both like, they're comedians, so like they bullshit for a living. So if you're looking for something that's about urban legends and things, but still is like really lighthearted and not too like intense, I just started listening to it like last week and I'm caught up, and it's
what's
like
it called?
12 episodes. It's called The Boogie Monster.
Oh, cool.
And then the other podcast that I want to recommend is one that I was actually just on.
Can I just
on.
Interrupt for 1 second before you move on?
Yes.
I just want to say I'm looking at these episodes right now for The Boogie Monster, and there's one called Biscuits and Bullshit.
Yeah, that's pretty accurate. It's
best
like
name for an episode ever.
I think they talk about weird stuff like 40% of the time, and then the rest of it is just like, hey, I went to this really good restaurant this week, let's talk about it.
The description says Kyle and Dave are going to talk about the Montauk Project but are going to save it for later, so instead they're going to talk about gout and biscuits.
Yeah. Nice.
I'm in.
Yeah, no, it's really fun. And then the other one is one that I just recorded earlier today. My friend Eric does it. It's called Super Hot Bad Guy Podcast. And they talk about different villains and why villains are so sexy so often. And the episode that I did was about the Xenomorph alien. And their podcast is pretty not safe for work. If, you know, sex and all that kind of stuff makes you squirm, don't listen to it. But we talked a lot about how Giger was this like creepo guy and like all of his art's really pornographic and awesome, and talk about the aliens and all of the different like metaphors for sex in the alien movies. So that was really fun.
That does sound fun. That might actually have me sold on it.
I thought for a minute you were gonna say that the alien was the sexy villain. No, I really want to hear you explain that one. Although I see Pinhead on this list, so I guess if Pinhead can be nominated, then Alien can too.
Yeah, it gets into like why is this a kink kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm sure there are alien fetishes out there somewhere.
Yeah, we came across a lot of like deviant art and fanfic about it, so we talk about that.
Rule 34 there.
Yep. Hellraiser is so S&M too. It's like,
oh totally.
Yeah. I can see where that would go into some weird territory and fun. Jackie, what kind of recommendations do you have for us?
The first one, some people who have only seen this show so far are gonna wonder why I'm recommending this, I bet. But it's The Strain, and it has recently been turned into a show. I think it's actually up to like 6 seasons or something crazy. But the book, which is written by Chuck Hogan and Guillermo del Toro, is incredible. I've only gone through the first book so far, and it's actually kind of funny. When we were hit by that hurricane and we had no power at all for a damn week, I was, you know, we're sitting around like doing nothing, and I told my husband, read me a story, and he picked up The Strain, which I didn't even know we had. And he started reading it. I'm like, this is really cool. And then he just happened to look up the books on the audiobook of it. And normally we wouldn't really listen to an audiobook, or I wouldn't really listen to an audiobook unless we're on a road trip. But it was narrated by Ron Perlman. And I was like, well, fuck yes. I am going to listen to all of that. That's awesome. So yeah, I have a mild obsession with Ron Perlman. I'm trying to rein it in.
He's got the best voice, man.
He really does. It's incredible. And it's so perfect for this particular story. But what I found particularly interesting about The Strain is how detailed they describe it. It's a vampire story. It's Guillermo del Toro's vampire story, and how they go into the old world feeling of this vampire and being in his presence and discovering the monster and all this is so incredible. It's absolutely the best descriptions of vampires I have ever heard. And then I tried to watch the show, and I'm not going to get too far into that because we actually have a book adaptations episode coming up, but the show just pales in comparison to this book. So if you're into vampires, and especially if you're into Guillermo del Toro, I would definitely recommend checking that out. And if you have a mild obsession with Ron Perlman like I do, the audiobook.
There's also a comic book series.
Oh, is there? I didn't know that.
I actually haven't read the book, but I've read the comics and I've watched the TV show, but I kind of fell off the TV show. I do love the vampires. I think they did a good job with the vampires as far as the effects and stuff like that. But yeah, the acting.
Yeah, the effects look cool.
Acting is a little rough.
Immediately. Yeah, the acting is yeah. But immediately I was really turned off by how quickly they got into showing the vampire, where in the book it's this beautiful buildup that like really builds this tension, and it gives you, I mean, you could damn well smell the vampire in the room when you're listening to this description of the vampire. So it's pretty incredible the way the details they put into this book, and it's one of those things that they really put a lot of love into the actual book. I'm so far disappointed with how much love they put into the show, but that's okay because we have the book.
I love the that take on that vampire too. Kind of have the weird, like almost like insect like creatures, right? Like the weird things that come out of their mouth,
yeah,
and
that
stab into you, and then they like plant worms and
it's predatory in an icky way, you know.
It's much more like animalistic it. Vampire, much less romantic. Sexy
exactly.
Vampire.
Yeah, for sure.
No velvet.
Is the Jackie, is the look the same in the book as in the show? Vampires?
It's pretty similar. I was actually pretty impressed with the adaptation of the actual look, but I felt like they could have given it more attention in terms of building the detail for the audience before revealing the entire monster. Something that we run into with horror movies a lot is, you know, if they show the monster too soon, automatically you might think it's cheesy, or you're not really that afraid of it. It's right there. You've seen it. It's, you know what you're dealing with. But in the book, it's whole mystery, this entire the whole plane thing is shrouded in mystery of what caused this situation, and all these like random little incidents are like, what is going on here? And it's a huge buildup. So I think it really lends a different tone in the book, and I think it really lends a more interesting and very put you on the edge of your seat kind of tone in the book.
Nice. I think I'll do the audiobook.
Yeah. And my other recommendation is Black Mirror Season 3. Have any of you gotten to it yet?
No, not yet. I'm a little afraid, actually.
Yeah? Why is that?
I got halfway through the last season, and I was so disturbed, I had to put it down.
Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, it's good story. It's good storytelling, for sure. I really like Season 3 so far, and I've actually recommended Black Mirror in the past, just in general, but since Season 3 just came out a couple days ago, I wanted to revisit that. The storytelling is definitely top-notch, just like the other seasons, and this season benefits from some bigger-name actors, some very A-list actors. Like, I just watched one earlier with Kelly MacDonald in it, and the very first one has Bryce Dallas Howard starring in it, so it's you'll see some really familiar faces, and they are amazing in it. One thing that I noticed is that all of the stories in this season have the common thread of how evil technology is. That's cool. The whole premise of Black Mirror kind of lends itself to this very futuristic view, especially when it comes to technology. But I kind of wish they adventured more into, like, human evil, you know, like, straight up scary things, you know, more so than just technology driving everybody kind of crazy or going awry. But it is, it's, like, well worth the time. And just like the other seasons, it's a lot of sad fun.
Like the kind of thing where if you watch it in the wrong mood, it's going to ruin your day.
Yeah, it's gonna bum you out.
Okay.
Sad fun.
Yeah. I have yet to watch the show. I haven't seen it at all. So I have to catch up.
Oh, man, it's really good. But yeah. Be warned, you might be bummed out.
You gotta be in the right mood for it. Definitely, yeah.
It's on Netflix, right?
Yeah, it's all on Netflix. In fact, I think Netflix bought it and they just did this third season.
Yeah, I think I added that to my watch list after you recommended it the first time.
Yeah.
And I keep thinking, I'm gonna watch that one day and then I'm gonna recommend it too. And I haven't gotten to it yet.
Oh.
Yeah.
We'll get there, dang. But that's all I got this for this week.
I'm going to run down mine really quick because actually one of mine kind of applies to what Jackie just said. I'm going to recommend Westworld, which is also kind of a technology is evil
theme. I've been wanting to check that out.
To be perfectly honest, between preparing for Sam Raimi and then there's two other podcasts I did this week, I haven't had a lot of time to watch or read anything new except for Westworld. But I'm really, really impressed with it. Beautiful production. It's a TV series. It is brand new. Stars Evan Rachel Wood. There's a lot of people in this. It's so great. Anthony Hopkins, James Marsden.
Ooh, I love James Marsden.
Ed Harris. Ed Harris is so good. It's such a great show. So it's inspired by a 1973 film of the same title by Michael Crichton. And it's about a futuristic theme park that's populated by artificial intelligence. And the idea is that, you know, you have these kind of rich clients who can come and pay to have this Western experience in this giant park with these artificial people. And you can get away with basically whatever you want to. The guest is, you know, it's all about making the guest happy and giving them whatever they want. And I don't think this is a spoiler because I'm only 2-3 episodes in and they've already made this perfectly clear. But what's supposed to happen is these artificial people that they create are supposed to forget every time they restart a new adventure with a new guest. They're not supposed to have any memory of what happened before. And that's starting to not happen. And they're starting to have like some kind of weird, what they call viruses, bugs, that are happening in the machinery and the people, and they're starting to ask some questions they're not supposed to ask and realize some things that are going on. It got real intense real fast. Like, it's a crazy show, but the production value is just gorgeous. Absolutely stunning. It's reminding me a little bit of the look of Hannibal. If you guys watch the TV show Hannibal.
Yes.
It's just like, yeah, it's just such beautiful shots of everything and really, really beautifully made. And the cinematography is so impressive. Like, you could pause it at any point and have like a piece of art to throw on your wall. It's just gorgeous. Anthony Hopkins is really strange and intense. And Evan Rachel Wood is really, really great. She's actually like, she plays the main character of the artificial intelligence. And she's the oldest one in the park. But she's this like really young, pretty beautiful girl. And she's very, very innocent. And she has this very innocent, naive view of the world. And she has these lines that she repeats over and over again about how beautiful the world is and how nice everything is. And she's put through some really horrible things over and over again. And every day she wakes up thinking about how beautiful the world is. And it's just a really strange and unsettling like contrast, you know, because you just watch her wake up every day and talk about how beautiful the day is. And it's like, oh, God, you have no idea what happened last night. Like, what? Yeah, it's a beautiful show, though. And I definitely have to recommend it. My second recommendation is old. I'm just going to say that right now. But I was invited to be on a friend's podcast this week called Legendary Runs, where they go over some huge comic book series that they consider kind of foundations of the comic book world, things that made a big impact on a lot of people. And we got to talk about Lock and Key, which is one of my favorite book series ever. Yeah. So I got to like revisit the entire series. I reread the whole thing, which is insane because there's like, I don't know, 100 books, it feels like. There's a lot. And it's a fantastic story. It's written by Joe Hill, who is one of the sons of Stephen King. And the art is by Gabriel Rodriguez. It's about a New England mansion that has all these doors that open with magical keys. And each of these keys kind of do different things. And this family. This comic series is different than any other I've ever read because it starts off immediately with some incredibly tragic and brutal events. It just kind of like throws you right into craziness from the first page. It's really intense. I should say probably ahead of time, there's quite a bit of like trigger material in this book. Mm-hmm. There's home invasion, there's sexual abuse, there's all kinds of things. There's mental illness. And it just jumps right in from the beginning. So there's not really like a good time to prepare yourself for what's going to happen. But it when it comes down to it, it's a beautiful story about a family who goes through some really bad traumas together. And they discover this family home that they've never lived in. And they discover these keys. And there's an evil thing that lives in the house that's just waiting for them to come and set it free. The evil thing even gets to do some really cool kind of like gender bending stuff, which you never see in books. So that's really fun. Like she, he, mm-hmm. evil thing. Yeah. So it's a really incredible and intense story, but it's got a ton of heart. And it's got some really great, like creepy stuff. That's not, you know, so much on the surface. It's like really like kind of strange mental things that kind of twist your head around in some weird ways. This is my third time reading it because I've actually covered it on another podcast once before. Apparently I'm becoming the person to talk to about Lock and Key. And this is the first time I read it as a parent. And I have to say, like, it was a little bit more difficult as a parent because there is some intense, like, there's some tough moments with child violence in here. So I was like, oh God, I kind of forgot what was coming until I got to it. I was like, oh, okay, my heart's out now.
Aww.
But it's a really beautiful series and it's got such a huge fan base that there's actually a company that makes, they make all of the keys and they've made like new kinds of keys. And they create these beautiful, like big, like brass and metal keys in these like collectible velvet pouches, and you can buy all the actual keys and hold them, which is really cool. I have a coloring book too. I have a Lock and Key coloring book, which sounded like a really cool idea until I realized just how intricate and detailed Gabriel Rodriguez's artwork is. It's like, it took me like 2 weeks to color one picture in that book. So yeah, that's what I've got. And I'm excited to hear from the ladies from the Witch Files. I think Sabrina, are you our resident comic book nerd? Right?
No, that would be me.
No, that's Karen. Okay.
Yeah,
I read, but Karen's got me beat hands down.
So what are you ladies bringing for us today?
I have comic books, of course, to recommend. What else? The first book I'm going to recommend tonight is Insects, and that is spelled INSEXTS.
Oh boy.
And it's written by Marguerite Bennett with art by Ariella Cristantina. I'm hoping I'm pronouncing her name right. And it's published by Aftershock. This is a beautiful Victorian horror that takes place in London. And it involves two women. One is a woman of mixed race. She's Indian and English, I believe. And she is married to an aristocrat who was broke and basically married her for her dowry. So it's kind of a loveless marriage. And in addition to that, she's barren. Every baby that she has birthed has been stillborn. So he's lost total interest in her. So she has a lady maid called Mariah, and she and Mariah form a love attachment. So I want to warn you that this is a book that's it's considered erotica, and it has a lot of same-sex intercourse between the two ladies. But it's a great book because Mariah turns out to not be quite what you think she is. And I don't really want to go into it too much because I want people to read it, and I don't want to spoil it. But it is great Victorian horror with creature elements. That's all I will say. And it's a great commentary on women during the times, and it's a fun read, and the art is beautiful.
Marguerite Bennett is fantastic.
Oh yeah, I have a huge crush on her. She not only writes well, she's also very beautiful. The second book that I have to recommend is called Manifest Destiny. And this one's been around for a while, but I'm only just getting to read it. And this one's published by Image, and it's written by Chris Dingus. And The art is by Matthew Roberts. And this is a reimagining of the Lewis and Clark expedition. It recounts their exploration of the uncharted West before it became America. I usually don't like comic books that are based on real historical events. I usually don't like that sort of book. Mm-hmm. But this one grabbed me because it is a reimagining and it is laced with lots of supernatural and really spooky and crazy things that they encounter during this expedition. A lot of folk legends and, and a lot of straight up horror stuff. So, and again, I don't want to spoil it for people. I want them to read it. And then the last recommendation I have is a book called Rachel Rising.
Oh, so good. And
I know. I love this book. And this was written by Terry Moore with also by art by Terry Moore. And this book is about a young woman who wakes up one morning after being out partying. And she finds herself in a shallow grave out in the woods. And she quickly finds out that at some point during the night, someone murdered her.
Oh, geez.
And she has surprisingly come back to life from death. And the story is about her trying to find out, number one, who murdered her and why. Mm-hmm. She lives in a really small town and she has to find out all these crazy, intricate things that happen in the town, all these secrets. And again, there's a lot of supernatural elements in this book. And it's beautifully illustrated by Terry Moore in black and white. And he recently released an omnibus. I tried to get it at Comic-Con this year at New York Comic-Con, and it was sold out.
Oh, that sucks.
And it's this huge brick of a book. But if you can get the omnibus, it would be fantastic because it's just beautiful.
Yeah, and it's a completed series, so you can read the entire thing.
Right. He just completed it this year.
Mm-hmm. That's an amazing story.
Yeah.
I was reading that one as it came out, and I just spoke with a few friends of mine at Talking Comics about this. They were all at New York Comic Con, and they raved about how Terry Moore's wife is, like, the sweetest, nicest person you could ever run Aww. Into. And that she just, you know, everywhere, every time they see her at a con, she's like, she goes above and beyond to help people. In fact, a friend of mine wanted to get the omnibus and he missed out and couldn't get it. And she apparently sent one to him.
Oh,
like,
nice.
Like after the con, she said, I swear I'll get you one. And she got him one. And he was so surprised that she actually followed Aww. Through with that. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Amazing. Yeah.
It's really nice. Nice people in the industry, you know? No, those are great. I started reading Manifest Destiny a while back and I fell off of it. So I need to catch up with that one again.
I just finished volume one. So yeah, you need to catch up.
And I think it's kind of like, don't they tell like a different story, I think, in each arc.
Yes, yes.
Like it's the same setting, right? But it's a different group
yeah.
story.
Yes. Yeah, right. They cover a different type of folktale and spooky creature or creatures.
Yeah, that's a good one.
And that's it.
Just in time.
Just in time before our battery runs out on my laptop. All right. Rachel Rising, I just started reading it. I can't wait to get into it. Oh boy.
I might make the girls read that one time so we can cover it on the show because it's worth a full show of discussion.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be a great podcast episode.
Sabrina, what do you have for us?
Let's see. I have a couple of podcasts. These are both podcasts where people tell their own personal ghost stories, and I've been listening to them for a while now. I think
Very
both
cool.
of these guys have been doing it for about 10 years. But one is called Jim Harold's Campfire, and it's kind of set up like an AM Coast to Coast where people just call in and have a very casual conversation. And most of the stories are about ghosts. Sometimes you get people talking about UFOs or Bigfoot or sometimes like angels. But out of the two, my favorite is Anything Ghost. And this is produced by Lex Wall. He usually reads submitted stories and he does music and effects to go along with it. And there's a great atmosphere he creates and kind of a Victorian Gothic kind of aesthetic. So
that's very awesome.
It's a cool, creepy little tale. I love listening to it. In the spirit of Sam Raimi, I have one funny horror movie that I took a chance, came across on Netflix called Deathgasm. This came out last year, and it's about a teen heavy metal band, and they discover some enchanted evil music that once played unlocks the gates to hell.
Awesome.
And fun terror ensues from there, but it's surprisingly really funny and kind of low budget, but the acting and the relationships and everything, it was actually really enjoyable. I was pleasantly surprised.
Nice.
And another Netflix find that I took a chance on is a movie called Troll Hunter. This is a surprisingly good monster movie, but it's Norwegian, so there's going to be subtitles. It's from 2010, and there is a documentary crew following a bear poacher who is sent into the Norwegian woods to investigate why a bunch of campers have started being killed off in horrible ways. And he suspects it's trolls, but it's really good pacing. And by the time you get to see the trolls and what you see of the trolls, it's they're actually pretty scary trolls.
It's always trolls. It's always trolls when things go crazy. Is anybody does anybody else watch Walking Dead? Because I just want to say, like,
yes,
I keep glancing at her. I keep glancing at our Twitter to make sure that we don't have any listener questions, and I'm like, damn it, shut up, don't look, shut up. because it's coming back on tonight, and we all know somebody is going to die, and I don't know who it is, and I don't want to know before I watch the show.
I literally just ran into that same thing. I picked up my phone to check our Twitter, and I was like, no, I don't want to see, I don't want to know who it is.
I just see, like, I see people just, like, freaking out already, and I'm like, I don't want to know, I don't want to know. That's what I get for using TweetDeck. I have, like, everything on one screen, and I can't not see everything else.
Yeah, all I forgot, right. It was on tonight.
Yeah, it's not going to be fun.
Oh.
Not that The Walking Dead is usually fun, but this is not going to be fun. So today's topic, like I said, is director and producer Sam Raimi, which we will start talking about right after a very short break.
Well, my name, it is Sam Hall, Sam Hall. Yes, my name, it is Sam Hall, it is Sam Hall. My name, it is Sam Hall, and I hate you one and all. And I hate you one and all. Damn your eyes. I killed a man, they said.
Okay, so Sam Raimi. He is an American film director, producer, screenwriter, and actor. Probably most famous for creating the cult horror Evil Dead series, as well as directing the original Spider-Man trilogy. He's also directed the superhero film Darkman. His most recent work is the 2013 Disney film Oz the Great and Powerful. Raimi has also produced several successful TV series and is the founder of Renaissance Pictures. Recently, he worked as the producer of The Possession and the 2013 remake of Evil Dead. He's currently working on a film adaptation of the critically acclaimed video game The Last of Us, which I don't know if you guys knew that, because I did not know that.
I just found out earlier today, and I'm, like, really psyched for it.
Whoa.
And Sierra let us know that today is conveniently Sam Raimi's birthday.
Yeah, I saw that on Twitter earlier today, and I'm like, yeah.
I mean, not conveniently. We totally planned that on purpose.
Yeah.
Karen and Sabrina, this topic was actually chosen by you. It was on your list of interests that you want to talk to us about. So can you tell us a little bit about your personal feelings on the work of Sam Raimi and why you chose that?
I love Sam Raimi. I just love the wonderful slapstick, crazy physical comedy of his stories and his long-term relationship with Bruce Campbell. And where else can you get your horror and also laugh until you cry? His movies just do that. The combination of humor and horror that always hits the sweet spot for me. That's why I chose him tonight.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big fan of Hercules and Xena. I've been watching them for pretty much ever. And Army of Darkness was one of the first movies that I watched with my husband back in the day when we started dating. So I think we probably know most of that movie by heart. It's the same thing like Karen said, just the combo of horror and slapstick. It's just so much fun, even when it's really, really gross. And he loves to be gross and torture his actors.
Yeah. Sabrina even named one of her cats after Ash.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I had read in my research that Raimi's highly influenced by The Three Stooges.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
A huge fan of The Stooges.
I could see that.
I've only ever been on one double date in my life, but it was to see Drag Me to Hell. So I end up becoming really, really good friends with a guy who is on the other date. He's friends with my husband and I now, and he calls that our first date movie.
No.
Yeah, that's a crazy movie.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think the girl that was on the other date enjoyed it as much as the rest of us did.
Aw, poor girl.
It'd be a good litmus test, though, for the buddy to, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they didn't go on any other dates after that, I don't think.
Yeah.
So how did you feel about that film? Oh, if you can't hang.
I was going to say before we started this, I spent an hour or so watching interviews with him just on YouTube. And he has three laws of horror that I thought we could probably start out with. The first one is that the innocent must suffer. The second, that the guilty must be punished, and that the audience likes to see the hero of the film like laying into the evil and fighting back. And also that you have to taste blood to be a man, were his words. So you have to have some kind of a blood experience or an experience with gore or something. And that's kind of like a coming of age thing, which I thought was an interesting way for him to describe it, because there's absolutely a lot of blood experiences, especially in like Evil Dead.
I was we were having a discussion recently about the differences between Evil Dead and, well, not Evil Dead 2, but Army of Darkness, and kind of how Ash changes between those films. And I think for me, Army of Darkness didn't really strike me as much as Evil Dead did. And I think I was trying to figure out why that was. And I think because Ash, the part of the charm of Ash was that he just took an ass whooping so well. Like he just kind of got beat up constantly. And it was just, that was part of what was funny about it, was just watching him, you know, just get the shit beat out of him by this demon. And Army of Darkness kind of made him into this like tough guy, kind of
he's the
playboy. Yeah. Well, and it was just kind of like, eh,
Army of Darkness. The same for me. Sam Raimi actually mentioned that Army of Darkness is the action of the three, of Evil Dead, Evil Dead 2, and Army of Darkness. It's the action one. And I mean, it goes from straight horror to horror comedy to action. So I like, for me personally, I'm not into action very much. So that, I mean, I as soon as I read that, I was like, huh, some things make some sense here. And I'm not sure if you guys have listened to this yet, but recently Bruce Campbell was on a Nerdist podcast. And he talked about his days as Ash and how annoyed he gets with when people demand that he is Ash again. And everybody always reverts back to this whole, oh, you were Ash, you were Ash. And he's like, you know, I was on burn notice for 8 years, but nobody noticed that. But he talked about how Ash as a character doesn't have a lot of character development. And that's was one of his issues with that character, is that he just doesn't really go. I mean, he goes through a whole lot, but doesn't really come out different in the end.
Over the TV series, has there been any growth for his character? I mean, now he's older and fatter and slower and he's the butt of more jokes.
That's the thing, is that's frustrating for me watching the TV show. And I'm not caught up. I think I've watched through the end of the first season. But he is very still kind of dumb and doesn't really just like kind of thinks he's very in the moment of things. He doesn't really think about like what consequences could happen, or he just, you know, wants to have a good time versus like, maybe I shouldn't read from this book, which is frustrating. So
I haven't seen
why Bruce is mad about it.
Yeah, I haven't seen a lot of the show myself, but one scene that I did happen to catch while it was on was Bruce Campbell's character, or Ash, talking about how he just wants to go back to the way, you know, he wants to go back to just sitting around drinking a beer, being useless kind of thing. And he was like really specifically saying he wanted to go back to being useless. And it's one of those things, well, okay, you're not going to take anything away from this experience. Cool.
Why has nobody sent that book to space yet? I mean, seriously. just put it in a rocket and shoot it out to space, right?
Right into the sun.
Let the Martians deal with it.
Oh, that could be bad.
Yeah, so, they'll come back and say, Klaatu, what is it?
Klaatu.
Evil Dead in space, yeah.
Honda.
Honda. Saying that all week, randomly. Honda. Anaconda.
Raimi has had a lot of rumored projects through the years that have been either taken over by someone else or that he chose to walk away from. A lot. Some examples were his interest in directing The Hobbit, the original announcement that he'd direct the World of Warcraft film, which he did not. A longtime interest in a film adaptation of the comic character The Shadow, which still hasn't come to fruition, and a rumor, apparently not intentional, that there would be an Army of Darkness 2, which he says is not happening. Mm-hmm. Were any of these projects ones that you wish had happened or that you found completely mismatched for his style?
I feel like that Oz movie was a little mismatched for his style, and that's one that actually did happen.
Yeah.
I think whenever I see Sam Raimi talk about films or filmmaking, he seems to have a lot of respect for the craft of it as well as like the business side of it. And he's very into, like, every time I direct something, I'm going to learn something new. And he's very transparent about that, that it's, like, a learning experience. But I think with, the step into 3D and stepping away from his, maybe not comfort zone, but, like, he's so good at doing things very DIY and doing it on a small budget and with, you know, very hands-on kind of directing. And I think that any step out of that is not the best for him.
What were some of the other ones? Was it The Hobbit and
he wanted to direct The Hobbit. Yep. He was originally announced that he was going to direct World of Warcraft, and then that changed like a year later. With, as far as I know, no explanation. And I think he's tried to make something based on The Shadow several times, and it's fallen through.
He did Darkman when he couldn't get the rights to The Shadow.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
And I think that turned out to be a good thing. I like Darkman a lot.
Yeah.
I saw Oz the Great and Powerful, and while I enjoyed it as purely kind of a fantasy sort of eye candy, it was very pretty.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't have known it was Sam Raimi if I didn't read that. Like, it didn't really have any style that said Sam Raimi to me. So the other thing I'm thinking about now, too, Sierra, with you mentioning 3D, is we're definitely going to talk about his camera style, because I think that's a huge part of what his films
the
look
camera
like, right?
Is a character in his movies,
right. And I imagine that 3D has to change that somehow, like it's got to change the way that you're, what you do with your camera and what you're able to get away with a camera, you know. And a lot of his stuff is you know, like watching something fly away from somebody really fast, or seeing like a creature coming at somebody else from the camera's point of view, from the creature's point of view.
Right.
That scene in Evil Dead where he's like thrown through the woods the first one, and it's just like everything's just hitting his face over and over again.
Yeah. And Sabrina, I think you were commenting that the creature flying through running through the woods from its perspective.
It always seems so much faster than the people it's chasing. I never understand why it never catches up with it. and why the door of the cabin, as rickety as
just,
it
like,
is,
falls.
Why would that stop them?
Yeah.
All the doors in that cabin, look, they were just ready to fall off at any second. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, those doors wouldn't keep a raccoon out, let alone a demon. It's funny because you say that it's like the opposite of all slasher films in history, right? Where they, like, think about Michael Myers and Jason, like, they walk so slow and somehow they always catch up with the person who's running. So Sam Raimi does it the opposite, I guess. There's a lot of recurring trademarks and motifs in his work besides the camera stuff. Some are his brother Ted Raimi and his friend Bruce Campbell on screen. Another one is his old car from his college days, a 1973 yellow Oldsmobile Delta 88.
The which classic.
Which is apparently even hidden somewhere in his Western film, The Quick and the Dead.
Oh, really?
And a bottle of Maker's Mark, which I didn't realize.
Okay.
Have you guys noticed these? And what do you think of a creator kind of watermarking their work this way?
I did notice the yellow Delta in Drag Me to Hell. It's the car that the gypsy woman drives.
Yep.
Yeah. And personally, I actually really love the idea of a creator watermarking their work. It's just one of those things that, you know, when you're watching a film, you a lot of times connect with the writing or the actors and the directing, but the directing tends to take a little bit of a backseat sometimes. So I feel like those little watermarks here and there from a director really just kind of reminds you, oh yeah, this is awesome. Yeah, I remember this. Cool.
Like a little inside joke for his fans.
Yeah, exactly. It's a much more succinct way of putting it.
I think Bruce Campbell gave it in, and it was on a podcast somewhere, I can't remember where, but he told people that the car was actually hidden under a specially created wagon in The Quick and the Dead. It was like the only way that they could include it.
Yeah, I was wondering where that fit in.
Yeah, the car is probably the most easiest thing to spot. I know, like, it definitely even makes its appearance in a couple of the Spider-Man. Well, but Bruce Campbell, too. He gets cameos in those.
And Bruce Campbell was mentioning that he was on his way to meet Sam Raimi for a meeting sometime and passed by this parking lot with at least 5 versions of that same car since he uses it so often. They just have versions right there in the back ready to go.
I never knew that his brother made cameos in all the films either. I don't.
His brother Ted was the Helga, I think her name is, like the she witch in Evil Dead 2, the big fat.
Yeah.
So, the lady in the basement.
In the big, yeah. And she, when they were filming that, it was like in the middle of the summer, and they rented out a high school gym to film in, to like set up, make their sets in and everything. And poor Ted Raimi had to like get in really early, get into the suit. And then throughout the day, he was just like sweating, like dripping sweat. And they would like take off the feet of the costume on breaks and just like dump sweat out of it. And he was like dying in there. And there's like nobody else in the world who would have put up with that except for his brother. So like, I feel like that's probably why Sam uses Ted in his movies. Poor guy. He knows he can get away with it.
I was talking about that today. We were just rewatching the second Evil Dead, and there's a scene towards the end where that character appears, and he turns his head, and sweat just pours out of his ear. And it's opaque because it's like mixed with the baby powder they used to get him into the suit.
Yeah, and it pours right onto the actress that he's doing the scene with, too.
That poor girl.
Gross.
Sierra, you remarked that you called Sam Raimi a very hands-on director, and I just want to share a few things that I found out. I think he's a little more than hands-on. Apparently, Tobey Maguire and Bruce Campbell have both kind of humorously described his penchant for abusing his actors. Mm-hmm. They say that to obtain detailed close-ups of a character getting hit by debris, Raimi will stand off camera and throw things at them, like swinging branches. at the actor in the center of the shot. Scenes from the documentary show that Raimi's on, throwing popcorn at Peter Parker during the walk to the wrestling ring in Spider-Man. He's actually the one throwing the popcorn at him, and tossing gold coins around during the bank robbery in Spider-Man 2. as well as a passerby banging their bag into Peter's head as he kneels on the sidewalk.
Aww.
So it's quite literally likes to get in there and like beat up on his actors a bit during the filming.
Well, if anyone's going to beat the hell out of those actors, may as well be Sam Raimi.
That's right.
He's earned it.
And when he's not pelting them with things, he's dumping tons of blood into their mouths.
Yeah, more like using a fire hose to hose them down.
I wonder if he's like the kind of, if they're able to laugh about that, or if he's just having to constantly, I'm sorry.
Well, a lot of them are method actors, right? So there you go.
Yeah, they keep on working with him, so it can't be that bad.
Apparently, he creates some very long-lasting connections with the people he works with. So he must be like an incredible guy to work with, I'd imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah, I noticed that Rob Tapert, I want to say his name is, who is Lucy Lawless's husband, is a producer on a lot of his projects as well.
Cool. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, he definitely keeps the same crew with him and carts them around.
Yeah, and Joseph Lodoka, who also did the music on Xena, has done some of the music did the music in Army of Darkness, I believe, and Evil Dead 2. So yeah, he's got a huge group of people that he carries around with him from project to project.
Yeah,
and his films are definitely what you call sound design. You know, it's not just a soundtrack; it's sound design. Like the sound is such a huge. Reminds me a little bit of one of our other favorite directors, Edgar Wright.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of like where you have to hear everything smash, you have to hear everything click and everything.
Yeah, but for me, that's kind of what makes some of his action scenes so great. It's not just the way he works the camera and he actually allows you to see what's going on, but that usually the sound drops out and you just hear the Foley work. So it really just focuses on the action in the scene. There's no distractions.
Yeah, it really pulls you into the scene at hand to be able to add that extra element of, oh, I heard that. Oh, okay, yeah. What was that whizzing by?
He also did production for the Grudge franchise, the American remake of the Japanese Ju-on, the Grudge, which was really interesting to me because the Grudge, this is really silly. I always apologize for this because I don't think it's really that scary of a movie to most people, but to me it was terrifying. And I had no idea that Sam Raimi had a hand in that film. I actually haven't seen The Grudge 2.
No idea.
That's how scared I am of it. I haven't seen The Grudge 2.
Oh my gosh. That shower scene where she's washing her hair.
Oh, yeah.
And that creature is in there. Mm-hmm. That's terrifying every single time. I'm actually surprised. I didn't know that he was involved with that project. But I can definitely see it. I can definitely see it.
Yeah, I didn't know that until I did research for this particular show. But like you mentioned with the shower scene, it seems like any time there's a shower scene in horror movies, it's some of the creepiest shit that ever happens.
Oh, yeah. Well, you're all naked and vulnerable.
Mm-hmm. For me, the hardest thing about The Grudge was the sound, which I guess maybe makes sense with Sam Raimi, yeah. But it was the sound that those... I don't even know. The lady was a kid. I don't know who made that sound. Yeah. That
I've noticed the creepy sounds really tend to get to you a lot. I
guttural
think that's like one of your
throat sound. Yeah. I think the story wasn't it. I may have blacked this out from trauma, but wasn't the story that the woman was choked or they were drowned in the bathtub? I can't remember how the story was that they were killed by the husband, I believe.
Yes.
Of the family, right?
Yeah, I remember the husband was involved in killing them.
Yeah.
I don't remember how he did it, but yeah, he was definitely involved.
I'm never going to see that movie again. What is your personal favorite work from Sam Raimi?
Evil Dead 2.
Definitely Drag Me to Hell here.
You know, Jackie, I'm with you on that one. Drag Me to Hell is a favorite of mine. It ties closely with Army of Darkness, but it just inches it out for me.
Yeah, yeah.
That's tough. For me, it's probably a toss-up between Evil Dead 2 and actually The Gift, which is more of a thriller, but I keep on forgetting he even did that one. I like that it has a really slow burn, and I like the way he depicts the psychic visions that the main character has. So
right. And I think that movie was based on Billy Bob Thornton's mother in some way. I think his mother was a psychic, and the story came out of some kind of incident that happened in her life.
That's interesting, huh?
Yeah.
I think Drag Me to Hell is definitely my favorite, and I gotta be honest, I didn't appreciate Sam Raimi all that much until Drag Me to Hell, and then I went back and rewatched Evil Dead 2, and you know, and now I enjoyed it a lot more this time.
I feel like after Spider-Man 2 and 3, or especially 3, like, he got a lot of flack for that.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, claiming to be a Sam Raimi fan became a bad thing for a while there.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
But the creation of Dr. Octopus is an awesome scene.
Yeah, that is true.
I just, goofy horror has not usually been my thing. Mm-hmm. I normally don't like humor and horror mixed together. I want to just be scared or I want to laugh. So the slapstick kind of stuff has never been my thing, but I appreciate it more now. And I think too, because for, I don't know, some, I remember as a teenager, Evil Dead was having a really big kind of like trendy moment. Mm-hmm. Where it was, you know, it was kind of being like rediscovered by younger people at that point. So everybody loved it all at one time. So I just had to be, you know, like hipstery and be like, I don't like that.
Yeah, had to rebel against it.
I watch Japanese horror. Oh. What would you guys like to see Sam Raimi do a remake or a film adaptation of?
Not Evil Dead.
Yeah, I think it's time to put that down.
Yeah, it's time to put that funny away.
I hate when people throw these on me at the last minute. Sorry. Sorry, ladies.
No, it's fine. It's fine.
Sarah and Jackie, did you guys come up with any answer for this?
No, I didn't.
I am now very excited for the possibility of a Last of Us version. That could be really interesting. I like when he has is contained a little more, like contain it to one setting or contain it to a smaller cast and just like, you know, jerry rig some camera, put the camera on a board and like move it around and tell an interesting story versus try to adapt a giant franchise.
Yeah, I could see that.
Maybe he would be a good person to do that Lost Boys
remake. Ooh,
that could be fun. Yeah.
Nobody has remade the Lost Boys yet, and somebody's got to get that saxophone player just right. Mm-hmm. So maybe Sam Raimi is the person to do that.
He would definitely give it the right amount of campiness mm-hmm. and fun.
I think I'm going to have to agree with you there. I'd love to see that.
Yeah. I was thinking along the lines of, say, Candyman.
Mm.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's a lot of body horror in that he could probably play up and have a lot of fun with.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's the only thing that comes to mind.
Sabrina, as a Xena and Hercules fan, anything in that realm?
I don't know so much about the period stuff, but I could see him doing some kind of adaptation of Borderlands. I love that video game just because there's so much humor in it. The bad guys are hilarious. I could see that really playing up to his strengths.
That would be interesting. I would watch that.
Yeah. There's some of these bad guys that like quote Shakespeare and like it's
yeah. What's that other game? BioShock?
Yeah, BioShock.
Yeah.
Well, you're the gamer here.
I don't know. I think Guillermo del Toro would be a better set for BioShock.
I agree. That really needs a like gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous set, and I don't think humor would really play that well in a lot of it.
Okay. Like a haunting kind of soft feeling about it.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. There's a lot of social commentary in there. Like you probably need to be a little more serious.
But Sam Raimi could do the Skyrim. Mm-hmm. Which is all humor all the time. Could you imagine Sam Raimi like doing, I don't know if you guys, how much you guys played Skyrim, but there was this fabulous bug in Skyrim where if you killed a bear on the side of the mountain, he would roll all the way down the mountain into the valley and then roll back up the mountain on the other side and just keep rolling and rolling and rolling forever. You just so watch him like roll. Yeah. Could you imagine? Nice. Sam Raimi would have a blast with that.
He would.
Or you'd sometimes you'd kill a dragon and the bones would sort of just float in the air over the top of your character. Yeah, like twitch and flail. That would be so fun.
Although thinking about Witcher 3, he would probably make some fabulous crones come to life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think he could have fun with Geralt too, yeah.
Just need a lot of fans. We can blow his hair around. Speaking of body horror, obviously we all love Drag Me to Hell.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So there's this, I don't know if you ladies have seen this kind of like theory rolling around, a bit like a conspiracy theory that Drag Me to Hell was about a eating disorder.
No.
Which I find really interesting because all of the body horror in that, most of it was all focused around her mouth.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's things going in of her mouth, things coming out of her mouth. They made a quick reference of her being, twice in the film, of her being overweight at some point. Like, she looked at a photo of herself. I think it was, like, Miss Swine. Like, it was, like, a fair that she was in as a child, and she was kind of like a Miss Pig or Miss Swine or something. And then the gypsy's granddaughter said, "Oh, you were a fat girl once, weren't you?" And she's like nasty about it. And she obviously had kind of a hang up about that.
Huh.
And yeah, even down to the coin, if you recall, when she wanted to give the coin back to her, she shoved it into the gypsy's mouth and like stuck it mm-hmm. down her throat.
Right. And in the actual like opening battle between her and the gypsy, like in her car there in the beginning, there's a lot of mouth stuff mm-hmm. going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like the gypsy gumming the side of her face. Yeah. Oh, God, that grosses me out. And she shoves like a ruler right in the gypsy's mouth to stop her. Yeah.
And the gypsy, the body tips over and pours all the embalming fluid in her mouth.
Oh, yeah.
And her nightmare, the maggots. Oh,
yep. Yeah.
Oh.
And the fly climbs into her mouth.
Yeah. I never thought about that before, but that mm-hmm. makes a lot of sense thinking about it in that context.
Even the when she meets the parents and she sees like the eyeball and the food
mm-hmm.
and it's this whole like weird like food freak out moment that she has based around the cake that she made, which kind of makes you think of like, you know, somebody who's like has an eating disorder and like everyone else is enjoying food and she's kind of like she can't touch it. She's freaking out about it. And
that actually sounds pretty solid as a theory. I had thought that it definitely seemed like she was going through some kind of mental breakdown because mm-hmm. of all the stuff she was dealing with in her life. But specifically an eating disorder, I hadn't thought about it. That really sounds like it holds up.
Yeah, it seems like it would tie all of her little quirks together there in terms of displaying a mental illness going on.
I think Sam Raimi has actually denied it, that there's any connection, but it's like, yeah, as soon as I heard it, I thought that makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if he was smart, he'd be like, yeah, that's totally what I meant.
Have that in my mind.
I'm glad that you haven't heard of that, because I didn't want everybody just to be like, no, that's crazy. No. He also said, I read this in another interview, which I thought was interesting. He said, in reference to the difference between making high budget and low budget horror productions, mm-hmm. He said, it doesn't take a lot of spectacle or costumes or production design or complex production needs. It really can be done in the simplest way. I just want to ask if you guys agree with this, because we recently had our costuming and makeup episode where we talk about some really kind of fun and complex makeup application. And we all kind of have a love for really good, you know, physical mm-hmm. makeup and special effects. So
I definitely prefer practical and physical effects. As far as set and costume, I guess it really depends on the story you're trying to tell.
I think it can be done, but I think sometimes it doesn't hold up as well over time.
Sure.
True. Yeah.
There was also another interview that I came across where he said, you know, there's two schools of thought. When you're making horror, there's, you know, you could assume that anything that the audience imagines is going to be a million times scarier than anything that you could show them, and play into that, or you can just show them the worst possible thing, and like that could be your goal. And he kind of goes back and forth between the two, and he's conscious of that, and I think there's room for, you know, what the audience imagines could kind of lend itself better to a smaller budget and not going too crazy and not showing too much.
Yeah, I agree. The way the story is told in terms of smaller budget could really be so much more frightening if that monster is just built up in a way that you don't actually see the strings pulling it up there on that low budget.
Like Jaws, like how the Jaws shark was supposed to be, you're supposed to see it a lot more, but then because like something happened at the last minute, they only showed the fin. And that was so much more terrifying.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah.
Or like the Babadook.
Yeah, I was just going to say that.
Which is basically a Kickstarter funded mm-hmm. film. And yeah, they I mean, all of the monster view that you see is basically just artwork.
Yep.
Yeah.
I don't even know. Do you actually see I can't remember if you actually see the monster outside of the book.
Not really.
There's in the on TV, there's like the guy in the costume that's like kind of a manifestation of the monster a little bit, but you don't really see like what is down in the basement.
Right.
It's just like in the shadows.
Right.
Yeah.
And it seems like that manifestation is just that. It's the little scribble from the book that she is picturing it as and not the actual monster. And when you're watching the Babadook, you don't think about the budget. Like it's terrifying.
Oh,
it's
not at all.
Yeah, you're caught up in the story so much that you don't think, oh wow, this was a really low budget movie, because it comes across as really complex and interesting.
Well, that film did not look low budget. I mean, the artwork was so well done that, you know, and the acting was so well done in that film. I don't think it didn't come across as low budget in any way to me. I was really shocked, actually, to learn how low budget it was.
Yeah. As opposed to, say, Evil Dead.
You can tell. Yeah.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
Talk about seeing strings pulling stuff. And
oh, gosh.
Yeah.
The scene with the woman out in the woods, and she crawls out of the grave and she's doing her little dance.
I love it.
Like, are those broomsticks? What is that?
And there's this one scene with the shotgun, and he reaches for it, and there's like a string, and he literally pulls it to him. It's just terrible.
But I mean, that still gets a reaction from the audience. It's just a different kind of reaction.
I think it was the original Amityville Horror. I don't know if mm-hmm. you have gone back and watched that recently. But I remember it being terrifying when I was a kid, and I went back and watched it, and I think there was, I'm not making this up, I think there was actually, at one point, there's a window, dark window, with eyes floating outside, and it looks like somebody has a chunk of cardboard with two holes cut in it, and they're just out there going, boop, 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 just wiggling it back and forth. Like, how did this ever scare me? I don't This is just terrible. So yeah, I mean that's did I miss anything here? That's what I had for things that I wanted to discuss. Do you girls have anything you want to add to this discussion?
One thing I did want to mention is that it's really impressive how much of a genre hopper Sam Raimi is. Like, he never stays in one place long. He seems to really like to evolve and try new things, which I really respect. I think that's really cool of him.
Yeah, and part of that, I think he kind of gets tied into horror because of Evil Dead and stuff, but the way he talks about them going about fundraising for that and getting sponsors and, like, why they chose to do a horror film is just because that was what was making money, and that's what they saw at the drive-in that always had an audience, and they were like, we can do a better movie than this, we can scare people better than this. But I think he isn't so much about, like, I'm gonna make the best possible this movie, I'm gonna make the best possible action movie or something, and he just wants to, like, give the audience an experience.
Yeah,
and he's very, like, conscious of that and, like, what will make people laugh or cry or scream or whatever. And if he doesn't accomplish that, I think he's probably kind of hard on himself and feels bad. And
no, buddy.
But then when he succeeds, that was his job all along.
Well, he probably felt like Evil Dead was a little bit of a failure at the time, or mm-hmm. not as much of a success as he hoped, and it's become a huge cult classic. So
yeah, when Evil Dead was first made, it didn't do well in the States, but then it did better over in Europe because Stephen King wrote a really good review at the Cannes Film Festival.
What a good guy. Good guy, Stephen King.
If Stephen King wasn't around, like, Sam Raimi probably wouldn't have a career, or it would be much different. But then once it started to kind of get popular over in Europe, then the US was like, hey, wait a minute, let's get this movie.
Yeah. He actually made a short documentary, I believe, right before he filmed The Evil Dead. And that was what he used to sort of pitch the movie to the movie studios.
Right. The 30-minute film. What was that called?
Something with, it had woods in the title. Like, I don't remember.
Woods or
Within the Woods.
Within the Woods.
Yeah. I wonder if that's still available to see online somewhere.
It probably is. Apparently that made almost $400,000, just this 30-minute short film.
Really? Oh,
that's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, so he used that to fund The Evil Dead along with, you know.
Did they mean investors. Like, he showed it to the investors and because of that? Like, it didn't get a release though, right?
I think it did get a small release, probably, like, locally somewhere and a few places.
Yeah. The way I understood it was that he made that as a way to, like, show businesses and, like, dentists and people, like, this is what we want to make. Right. Give us your money.
Yeah.
Did his IMBD show something before that called It's Murder in 1977?
It's Murder!
It's Murder!
The photo for that is like a hand-drawn handbill for the show. It's so cute.
It is. But, you know, there's a really, really nice review on it that somebody gave him, like, I don't even know how, but it's like 10 stars or something. somebody gave him and is just raving about how amazing it is. So good for you, Sam Raimi, on your very first film being an amazing review. Karen and Sabrina, is there anything else that you wanted to add to this discussion that I missed? Did I forget anything?
Let's see. Sam Raimi, he's actually a surprisingly good writer. When I was looking up his IMDb work, I didn't realize, but he wrote The Hudsucker Proxy, which is a phenomenal, weird, otherworldly movie, though not horror. And he made me appreciate slapstick.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been a Stooges fan. My husband loves that kind of stuff, but through Sam Raimi, that was, like, the one place we could kind of come together and appreciate all the nyuk-nyuk. Ridiculous.
Yeah, I'm impressed with the loyalty that he shows his friends. A lot of these people that he works with are his childhood friends, particularly Bruce Campbell, and how it's surprising how many of these Hollywood types forget where they come from and who their friends were and who got them where they were. And he seems very different from that. And it's great to see that. And it's great to see, you know, craftsmanship, you know, and appreciating craftsmanship and you know, having your team of people that you can rely on, and that's wonderful to see.
And of course that he was responsible for giving us Xena Warrior Princess. I can't thank him enough just for that alone.
He has a pretty thorough acting lineup here too. Apparently mm-hmm. he voices a giant squirrel in the new Jungle Book movie.
Good for him.
Yeah, they're mostly, it seems like mostly cameos, and people that he's worked with, he ends up in their work as well. Which is also lending to what Karen said. It shows some loyalty, and he, you know, really establishes those connections with people that he works with, which is really cool to see.
A lot of TV stuff.
Yeah.
A lot of TV appearances. Mm-hmm. Except for one I find really interesting was Miller's Crossing. He was apparently a snickering gunman.
Yeah.
Which would be really cute to see. So I think that wraps up our Sam Raimi episode, and I hate to wrap it up because it's been so much fun talking to the Witch Files ladies.
Oh, it's been so much fun, and we want to thank you for having us on.
Thank you for being on.
And of course, thank you for the Sirens of Scream. We're really enjoying it, and keep it coming. I love that you guys give recommendations every show because it keeps me going, jumping from something new and juicy, or reminding me about stuff that I've watched and have completely forgotten.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I feel like the people who listen to the show, I always wonder, how do they actually get to watch or read half of the stuff that we run off? Because when, you know, each of us bring two or three things every 2 weeks to recommend.
It gets to be a lot, yeah.
It's a lot, yeah. A lot of stuff. But we never stop coming up with new ideas.
But listen, if you can turn one person on to at least one thing, that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. It's not a wasted effort.
Yeah, for sure.
And I, you know, Karen, I got you on the comic books. I'm not gonna stop bringing the comic books to the show.
Well, that's good to hear. I just started reading after not reading for a long time, and so it's good to hear, you know, what you're finding interesting. Find new things to read.
And there's so much more horror and spooky stuff in the comic world out there now. I mean, it's like when I was a kid, most of what I knew was just, you know, superheroes or boring indie stuff. And now there's this whole other world. It's exciting.
There's just there's just a lot of good writing going on in comics right now. There's so many good books out there that you can't even keep up anymore. and I'm old enough to remember when you could count on your fingers the amount of good books that were out there. And so it's good. It's having a great renaissance. And I'm happy to be reading comics again.
Heck yeah.
I don't know if you listened to it, but if not, I will send it to you. I didn't realize you were a big fan of Black Magic. I have another show that I do. It's a monthly book club where we pick apart a volume of a comic book. And our very first show is on Black Magic.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, we really took it apart into tiny little pieces and discussed all of it and theories and, you know, what we think is happening. So if you haven't heard that, I'll send you a link for that.
Thank you, though. I appreciate that.
Yeah, I'd love to hear your thoughts because we, in our only to date comic episode, we poured over Black Magic. It was wonderful.
Yeah.
I think I mentioned you two actually in the show because we talked about whether or not we knew any real life Wiccans or witches. And I said, well, I know a couple of girls. Like two.
Well, if you ever revisit the book, look us up.
This is a little bit of a sad note, but I just want to say in kind of a moment of tribute to artist Steve Dillon, who is actually the artist who did the Preacher comic books, passed away.
Yeah, just yesterday. Yeah.
Oh. Yeah.
Oh, that's terrible.
And because we did a big episode on Preacher, which was our first, I think our first one that we really talked about comic books in depth. I think bye, Steve.
Miss you, Steve.
Thanks for your work.
So the Sirens of Scream is a member of the Mega Nerd Media family. Visit meganerdmedia.com for geek-related columns, reviews, interviews, and videos. You can reach us via email at sos@meganerdmedia.com and on Twitter at Sirens of Scream. If you do listen to the show, please, please, please rate and review us wherever you're listening because it helps a lot to get more people to see the show. And definitely send us comments and questions, anything that you want to talk to us about, because we really love mentioning our listeners on air, and we love talking about your opinions and your ideas and answering your questions. So send those to us. And if you don't know this yet, 31 Days of Horror is not over yet. Mm-hmm. And on our Twitter and our Facebook. We've been giving you guys a movie recommendation for every single day for the month of October, which will culminate in a super Halloween recommendation where you get something extra special from us. So, you know, definitely keep up on that. I'm going to start with Karen and Sabrina this week. Can you tell our listeners where they can find you online?
Sure. We have our website. We're at thewitchfiles.com, and that's witch with a Y. We are on Instagram and Twitter, the same handle, The Witch Files. We even have a blog spot, thewitchfiles.com. And if you guys just want to talk to us, we're at thewitchfiles@gmail.com also. Send us a line. Yeah. Say hi.
Sierra, where can listeners find you?
I'm at Sierra Houck online. H-O-U-K.
Sierra has been running an amazing Sirens Tumblr for us.
Yeah. It's just like creepy shit that I find on Tumblr.
One day we will remember to put into our show notes so we don't mention it as an afterthought. I'm sorry, Sierra.
That's fine.
Jackie, where can listeners find you?
I am Jackie the Robot on Twitter and Instagram, which is where you're about to see this totally badass lich mask that I made.
Yes.
Nice.
And also see me yell at Sierra for suggesting Tusk for our 31 days of horror.
Have you been walrus?
I've been walrus.
I heard that's a really disturbing movie. To say the least.
And you can find me at Lissa Punch on Twitter and Instagram. And also talk to all three of us on Sirens on Twitter, because that's where we like to be the best, really, is on Sirens. So that's a wrap for this episode. The next time we come back, we actually have, this is kind of crazy, but we have two guest episodes in a row, which I don't think we've ever done. It's a little intense. We're going to talk to writer Sean French and artist Mortimer Glum about their comic book and video game projects, which they are working on both of those. So we will see you then. And wait, will we see them before Halloween?
No, everybody stay safe.
Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween. When I look out my window, many sights to see. And when I look in my window, so many different people to be, that it's strange, so strange. You got to pick up every stitch, you got to pick up every stitch, you got to pick up every stitch. Must be the season of the witch. Must be the season of the witch, yeah. Must be the season of the witch. Think I see summer cat looking over his shoulder at me, and he's strange, sure is strange. You got to pick up every stitch, you got to pick up every. Must be
when I look out my window. What do you think I see? And when I look in my window, so many different people to be.